Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, blessed are down the path we must try. That path is the eternal path of the Almighty, which He has provided for each and every human being who has to wake up from his or her dream to realize they have a Tzelem Elohim, a divine image, to get out and scrimmage and make this world more inhabitable to the exclusion of hatred, jealousy, and unneeded competition. Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed soul. We're alive because we're going to be staying alive most existentially. The blessings of the Torah were towards Chaim, instructions of life, towards Chesed, instructions of kindness, towards the Rachim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned in to Blog Talk Radio. And this is Blog Talk Radio presentation of Soul Class, which I will humbly assert is the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class, actually I think it's Soul Class 763, I think in the promo I wrote 759, but that's okay, a mistake can be sweeter than wine. This is Medication Part 2, blessed is our eternal creator, Baruch Hashem, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. With creator's help, our broadcast is taking place right now, and actually I wrote, wow, December 16th, it's actually January 16, 2022. It's now 12:32 Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, equals AKA, equals the USA, uniting souls effectively or effectively. Topic for discussion will be learning about what is meditation from a Torah biblical perspective. The call number can be, if you want it to be, and to participate in the most organic fashion, 563-999-3688, 563-999-3688. 3688. If you committed to your memory, that's great. Until we reunite next time, and we'll be writing in a couple of seconds with our Rambam teacher, student, and activist of dissemination of the Nesher Gadol, the Great Eagle, Dennis Ryan. May the merciful Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. The tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption. That means for all of us. Children of Israel and the children of Noah. That means all of us. Collaborating to eliminate hatred, jealousy, and competition not need upon the face of the blessed earth. Torah of Israel, written oral traditions, inner and outer dimensions of mindfulness. Remember, a human mind is filled with miracles, which is called an S. And as we're going to lower the music, and this is something I find very attractive because it reminds me of the type of song my father may have blessed memory of song, even though he might have never heard this one. This is Gandalf from the Lord of the Rings singing, the road goes ever on and on. Down from the door where it began, now far ahead the road has gone, and I must follow if I can. And I don't think he sang these lyrics yet, but the lyrics added in the promotional piece to this YouTube video is pursuing it with eager feet until it joins some larger way where many paths and errands meet, and whither then I cannot say. So let's turn on the music and bring on our co-host Dennis Ryan, and let's just lower the music. And let's get on with the show. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Good afternoon, Don. Good afternoon, all our listeners.
And that's an international listening audience, Dennis, which you have been blessed and to want not to be disappointed. Hopefully, this growth will be growing and growing. Dennis, you know what I find interesting about the lyrics to this song before we get into the meat, the juicy parts of today's presentation with the Almighty's blessing? Where it says, down from the door where it began, the word door, which we normally associate with that piece of wood or metal that can lead us from outside an entrance to inside where we're trying to get into. The word doors actually has a Hebrew meaning as well. It means generation. So we say down from the generation where it began, because we can only go as far back as the generation we're from, for where we began is from within our own generation. Any comments on this matter?
Well, a door is a two-way directional thing for humans. And we basically want to go to the future or in some way, shape, or form. So we must make sure that the door is open so that we can pass through or squeeze through, whatever the case may be, because we're always looking at our future that's yet to come.
Thank you, Dennis. I'd like to share something. This was compiled by the Lubavitch Rebbe about a meditation which is intended to have an effect, a positive effect, EFFECT, and also an affect, an AFFECT, some sort of emotional empowerment. And it goes like this. In addition to arousing divine compassion upon those who had deep soul connections with them, meaning these Rebbes of Chabad, Lubavitch, our forebears, the Holy Rebbeim, observed another sublime practice. From time to time, while alone, they would bring to mind those individuals and meditate upon the love and connection they felt for the Rebbe. Then as water reflects the face, the Rebbe would shine those feelings back. This practice arouses the innermost spiritual potency of the individual who is being thought about. And concluding, this we can plainly observe, and I know we've all experienced this, when we look powerfully at someone, we must respond by looking back, because a penetrating glance arouses the essence of the soul. The same is true of the power of thought. Dennis, how many times, I mean, you're married longer than I, and I know you've thought of your children, I've thought of my children, maybe this has happened when you've thought about your grandchildren, you think about them, and lo and behold, voila, the next moment they're calling you, or voila, you're meeting them in the house, or voila, you're meeting them in the street. Can you talk about this, have you experienced it, and can we promote this as a tangible human experience to other human beings?
We can, but we're not talking about mental telepathy. We're talking about ordinary humans, and if they start thinking enough, they'll think about others. Because the more you think, the more you uncover. The more you uncover, the more you experience. So therefore, we like to be alone sometimes to let our mind take over and follow the path that it is following in and of itself. That is, that everything that you've put into your mind is still there, and it's coming back to you. And especially if there's no distractions around, you can concentrate on what has happened and what you plan for the future. You may not plan it directly, but your mind is always working. Your mind never goes to sleep. It's always working.
Thank you, Dennis. I'd like to share an experience that happened with me about 2 weeks ago. For those of you who are familiar with the Brooklyn transportation system, narrowly known as the MTA, Metropolitan Transportation, oh boy, what does the A stand for, Dennis? I forgot, MTA, Metropolitan Transportation
Authority,
right, which ultimately they're empowered by the authority of everything, the Almighty. So I was waiting for a Q train to pick me up from Avenue M, which is in the heart of Flatbush. Whether it be the right ventricle of Flatbush or the left ventricle of Flatbush, I don't know. But it's one of the main stop-offs when you want to get into Flatbush. And I was thinking about my wife, and lo and behold, she called me on her cell phone saying she's coming home from someplace north, a northern part of Flatbush, or maybe even closer to Sheepshead Bay. And I said, oh, I'm waiting on the M platform. And, you know, so when your train, which I want to catch, the Q train, you step outside of your train, and I'll run to, you know, and we'll be on the same car. I said, no, I'm not going to leave it. I'm not going to get out of the car. It's cold. I said, okay, listen, we'll meet at Botanical Garden, which is a place where we can get off and then switch over to the 3 train or the 4 train in Crown Heights, and we'll walk back home. I said, okay. So as I'm waiting for her to come, all of a sudden the train stops. And lo and behold, I'm looking at my wife through the glass pane window, and by divine providence, the car that's connected, there's a long string of train cars, stopped right in front of him, and I got in there with it, and we just laughed, saying, the Almighty wanted us to experience it to show us that we might be separated, but he wants to connect us in the most unusual fashion, in a not in a way that happened by chance, but by divine providence, it can happen. Dennis, I'm sure you can relate to those type of things, but it was interesting how I was thinking about my wife. She called me, and all of a sudden, the power of that thought was connected somehow. Not that, again, I'm not talking about mental telepathy. I don't know exactly what that is from a Torah perspective, but I do know that the power of thought can act as a glue to bring other souls together. Your thought on those matters?
We don't really know how much power our thoughts have, but where do they go after we think about them? Where do they go while we're thinking about them? Do they last 100 feet, maybe a mile? Who knows? But they float around, and there's other people who will pick up on the resounding thoughts. They may not hear them clearly, but their mind pays attention. So we don't know exactly what, but we know there could be a connection. It's just like talking to God. You don't get God talking back to you, but you continue to talk to him. Why? Because you hope and believe that he will hear our thoughts. And you know what? He does.
That's right. In fact, Rabbeinu Bachaya, who lived in Hispania, before it was known as Spain, 1,000 years ago, talked about one of the principles of trusting in the Almighty is trusting that the Almighty is reading our thoughts. So I advocate the idea that if we understand this teaching, and on the most simplest level, that if we trust and even have a simple faith, emuna pshuta, the Almighty can read our thoughts, this super being who spoke and the world came into being, then therefore our thoughts are basically our cell phone, our wireless connection to the Almighty, that we can have that conversation. Now, we, as Dennis said, we might not be able to hear the Almighty speaking to us directly, and if we do, we're either prophets or there are other issues I don't want to go into, but the prophets did receive communications through allegories, and through speech, as say, like Moses in the oral Torah tradition brings out that when the Almighty started speaking to Moses, he didn't want to frighten him when Moses heard his voice. So it was couched within the voice of his father Amram, who was actually the leader of the, he was a Levite, and the Levites were not enslaved in Egypt. And therefore, by hearing his father's voice in the form of the prophetic conversation he was having with the Almighty, that Moses didn't have some sort of traumatic experience, like, you know, what is this voice that I'm hearing? Because he was strong of mind and strong of spirit. But again, even someone as great as the prophet Moses had to become accustomed to this type of communication. And Dennis, I think what people are a little bit intimidated by in this generation is that they are, because of the advent of computer technology, which can be used for tremendous levels of holiness and empowerment and fellowshipping human beings, and the cell phone now, and the earbuds, is that, in a sense, human beings have become a little intimidated by the idea of being outside of the electronic wireless connection. And there is a need, I think, to, first of all, advocate, right here on the program today, a sense of mindfulness, that a certain X amount of time during the day, we must disconnect from electronic cyberspace and computer technology, because we're getting inundated with so many facts and so many figures, some of it truthful, some of it needs to be a little bit more truthful, some of it out and out lies and distortions, which could really create delirious situations to the point that people have committed suicide from getting cyberbullied. So then what can we do to encourage other human beings to get to spend a certain amount of day every day in a mindfulness state of mind, to quiet down their mind, to catch their breath, to reduce the surge of cortisol, that stress hormone, and to inject with them a sense of it's okay to disconnect and reconnect to the Creator, the Creator is always connected to us, and then from there to build up a cognitive appreciation of cognitive meditation.
Well, there's so many things going on, and our minds are battered with multi-directional concepts of communication, sounds, noise, and so many other things. But if you want to do away with those distractions, You can concentrate on your own thoughts. Your own thoughts are true to you. They were given to you by God so that you had a free will to think about what you want to. And whatever you think about is not a bad thing, because your mind is not necessarily a bad thing. It's given to you by God to be used. But you got to use it to the fullest extent. And to do that is to do away with all these distractions that are hitting your head or bouncing off your skull. And you must do that so you can concentrate on what you think is important. So it's up to you to concentrate and to collect your thoughts and think about those things that are important to you and affects everybody else. Now, we even had a seasonal song that in the middle of it you hear, "Do you hear what I hear?" In other words, you as a human are no different than the other humans. So therefore, could you all hear the same words, the same directional sounds that are coming? Of course you can pick them up, but it depends on what you want to concentrate on. If you want to concentrate on those things that are not so good, that lead to other types of problems, or would you rather stick with those things that you know are true, that gives you peace of mind, and you can follow, even though the ideas are coming from your head? There's nothing wrong with your mind. Use it correctly.
Thank you, Dennis. You know, in fact, even though you're several years older than me, but both of you and I and people of our ages and maybe just a little bit younger than myself have a distinct advantage over the newer generation. Let's say people who are born from 1989 and onward, or say 2000 and onward, meaning you and I were raised in a generation, or we grew up majority of our youth, without the advent of a cell phone, without the advent of access to a computer, which can literally fill our minds with all these ideas. So we understand, and I also want to say that the Sabbath, the Shabbat, for the Jewish people, is a way of disconnecting. But it's really something that everyone should try to experience. And for those who were born from like 1989 onward, or say like 2000 onward, is really to your great credit that you can overcome that basically the milk, the cognitive, electronic, technological milk that you were raised on, just as say someone of my generation, or Dennis is like a half a generation older than me, that we were raised on a different type of milk, whether mother's milk or baby formula, and we were taught to think. At a young age, I had a certain aptitude towards multiplying, adding, subtracting, and division. Those are my fortes. My feathers got riffled. My mathematical feathers got ruffled when I would get deeper levels of algebra. Geometry, for some reason, although it's very pictorial, I struggled with it. It happened to be that point in my life when I was 15, 16. Maybe it was just too many hormonal surges that I couldn't focus on geometry. But I look back and I say, you know, I'm very happy of the generation that I'm a part of, that I was taught that solitude is a positive thing. So even with all the wisdom you just shared, Dennis, again, that we should, I think, encourage the younger generation, it's okay to disconnect, and you'll find that there's a level of technology within your brain that's even greater and more superior than the greatest artificial intelligence. Your take on these matters?
Well, we were lucky, Don, for our generation, because we had to listen to the word of our parents. They emboldened us to follow their thoughts, and that was the main source of direction that we got. It was supplemented by the teachers in school that also took that same viewpoint, that they're imparting information to you, not just words, but this is information of how to act, behave, talk, and to think and to analyze. What happens with the generation today, they sometimes think that they're going to get more information out of an electronic cell phone, either run on batteries or electricity. That's fine, but we had people we could identify with, And that's what we place our trust in other people. How much trust can you place in a cell phone? How much trust can you put into a TV where someone made up this story a couple of hours ago and it's trying to tell you this is how you should think? Why? Because you're listening? You must be able to discern the things that contain your information that you need for your future, not what someone else says, this is what you need. No, if your mind doesn't agree with what you're intaking in any way, shape, or form, that means a little red flag should go up, and you got to say, wait a minute, how can I verify or confirm what I'm hearing? Because if you don't, you don't have your parents to go back to who will now tell you the difference and explain it to you. The cell phone is not going to explain. It's a one-way deal. The cell phone doesn't care what you think. It's telling you what you should do, whether it's true or not.
Right. Thank you, Dennis. And I remember hearing the testimony of Dr. Michio Kaku, who I think is a professor at a CUNY college in Harlem, and he is the co-discoverer of the string theory of quantum physics. And he was once asked, and he's very, very high on technology and developing and making our lives better. He's a very elevated soul. And he was once asked about the innate intelligence of a computer. And he responded, the innate intelligence of a computer is equal to the IQ of a squashed bug's head. Because if you don't input into information, input data or data, whatever you want to say, into a computer, it's just a piece of metal with all types of plastic and all things that are holding it together. It has no intrinsic intelligence. And I think that it's, you know, I'm sure there's something to artificial intelligence, Dennis, but all artificial intelligence was programmed by a human being. So it's human intelligence being transformed or transmuted, whatever you want to say, or morphologically in motion into metal and plastic. Your take on these matters.
Well, innate objects are nice, but they really don't help you to understand your life, your mind, even the supreme being, the entity that created our world. They don't pass off any information regarding how they were created, because they were created or manipulated by humans. So Are you going to rely on information that's secondhand or handed down through an innate object, and now that object is going to help you to understand what life is all about? You are missing a whole bunch of worldly experience if you rely on innate objects to direct you. Your mind is 10 times more powerful, and if you don't use it, you could lose it.
Very good. So we'd like to now go a little bit theological on everyone, but in a way that it should not ruffle the feathers of everyone, because this is straight scripture, and then an elucidation of the scripture from the Rambam, and then we'll ask Dennis to give us feedback. So Rambam writes in the second chapter in the Foundations of the Torah, in his epic work called Mishnah Torah, that it is a mitzvah, it is a commandment to love and fear, or for some people who got bent out of shape with the idea of fearing, to revere this glorious and awesome God. As it says in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5, and you shall love your God, your Lord, and in Deuteronomy 6:13, fear your God, your Lord. So the Rambam goes in the next law, halacha, the foundations of the Torah. What is the path to attain love and fear of Creator? When a person contemplates his wondrous and great deeds and creations and appreciates his infinite wisdom that surpasses all comparison, he will immediately love, praise, and glorify Creator, yearning with tremendous desire to know God's great name. As King David stated in chapter 42, verse 3 of Psalms, my soul thirsts for the Lord, for the living God. When he or she continues to reflect on these matters, he or she will immediately recoil in awe and fear or reverence, appreciating how he is a tiny, tiny, lowly, and clouded creature, standing with his flimsy, limited wisdom before he is of perfect knowledge, as David said, quote-unquote, Psalms 8, verses 4 and 5, when I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, I wonder what is man, woman for that matter as well, that you should recall him or her. Based on these concepts, Rambam continues the conclusion of this law, this teaching. I will explain important principles regarding the deeds of the master of the worlds and provide a foothold for a person of understanding to develop love of Creator, as our sages said regarding love. In this manner, quote-unquote, you will recognize he who spoke and thus brought the world into being. So Dennis, there is a path to love and fear Creator, and people can try to generate their own path for loving, fearing Creator or revering Creator, or they can just simply take this as a cognitive exercise and write up on the ivy tower of self-aggrandizement. What is your take on these matters?
The take on the matters is, if you put emphasis on our mortal world, it is imperfect. You cannot be perfect, no matter what you do, based on mortal principles. The only principles that exist are the ones that our Maker created. And those are the principles that we must stick to. We must follow. Because if we were all perfect, we'd all be in heaven. But we're not. We're imperfect. And we have to work hard at trying to attain perfection, even though we know we're not perfect. So how can you live with that? How can you love the Creator and say, well, my fellow humans, they're imperfect? No, they're trying as much towards perfection as you can. So all the other mortals are in the same boat. But the whole process is to be close as we can to the Creator. So when you open up your mind, you don't talk about all your neighbors. Why? You can at any time. But the important thing is our Creator, because that's the object of our being and the purpose of being on the earth. So while you're here, concentrate on those things that are pure, simple, and attainable. Stay away from anything that points us more towards the imperfect or mortal surroundings that we live in.
Thank you, Dennis. By the way, since we brought up the topic of Rambam and his teachings, do you have something from the Guide to the Perplexed or any other teaching you've come across relating or from Rambam that you'd like to share with our blessed listening audience?
Well, one thing I always admired about the Rambam is his humility. Very smart, very intelligent, but he doesn't flaunt it. He doesn't show it up.
Right.
He
right.
doesn't present it as a cover for anything, because he explains everything and keeps it out in the open. In the Guide to the Perplexed, for instance, he brings up different topics. But what he does, he explains all the details, all the cons, all the pros, and all the references that are made. And he wants you to understand it before he starts the discussion as to where these details should fit in your mind and fit in your relationship to God. So that we are not talking about being holy, but we're talking about being better humans. And we do that by thinking about all our actions and all our thoughts. So by thinking, trust in your brain, it was God-given, it's yours to use. So we must concentrate on the positive things to point towards our Creator in any way, shape, or form. So he may have talked about details that people would pick up the Guide to the Perplexed and say, but this doesn't have anything to do with God. Wrong. It has to do with the humans, how we think about it, all the mortal pros and cons, and where should we create a path so we can concentrate on the positivity of our Creator.
Beautiful, Dennis. I just want to mention that one of the reasons why I enjoy having you as a co-host is that while you're talking, you're stimulating my thought process. And one of the things that you just brought up, stimulating with this idea that God has given us the ability to think, and I realized that even something we take for granted, that the process of the human experience of thinking is a gift from God. And how many people will take a moment, or maybe more than a moment, maybe many moments in a day, to acknowledge that even the fact that we can process the letters that flow through our mind within our right brain processing, or our left brain processing, or back brain processing, or the epicenter of our brain, is a gift from God. So I want to share, I just want to thank you for that. And maybe you can expound upon that a little bit more before we go a little bit more into the cognitive version of meditation. Reacting to my feedback.
Well, you just take TV, for instance. Some people will wake up in the morning and say, oh, good, I woke up in time for Good Morning America, or hello, or today. But how many people will get up and say, Good Morning God, thank you? Do they think that the TV is going to help them to have a better day or a better tomorrow or a better week or a month? If you don't recognize God as part of your life, then are you putting him aside in some way, shape, or form? Which is more important? You can decide. Follow your nose.
Also, you mentioned how Rambam will take a person in the Guide to the Perplexed, and I would say in other teachings as well from the Rambam, or just learning about the life of the Rambam, which was not an easy life that he lived over 800 years ago, is that the pros and cons is an outcome of getting into a meditative, thoughtful, mindful process, because you're going to, let's say, as an allegory, you'd look at a coin, a dime or a nickel. On one side of the coin, it has one type of design. On the other side of the coin, it has another type of design. In the middle of the coin, on the edges that go around the 360 points that make the circular design of the coin, it's basically pretty uniform. So from the larger perspective, I would say, in terms of the meditative process, there's this idea of looking at both sides of the same coin and realizing that there's a symmetry, there's a divine symmetry involved in analyzing any topic that comes across the microscope or the scanning system of the blessed human mind. In order, the person will make a decision, do I go forward with this thought or reasoning or intellectual process, or do I cease and move on to something else? Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, this sort of goes back to the Bible, and to me, it's fortunately, not unfortunately, and that is the words of Job. He said, why me, Lord? Why me? Who was he talking to? Was he talking out loud to God? Or was he talking mentally to God? Well, we all go through this at some point in time. The Rambam did. For about a year, he was in a miserable case of disparity. And he basically didn't say the words, why me, Lord? But he was trying to figure out, what did he do wrong? How could he end up being in full of despair? We all go through this. It's part of our imperfect mortal life. And you must use your mind to get out of it. If you start thinking about the mistakes you made and reflect on what you did and make an analysis, you will find out that you were off the normal beaten path. And you fell into traps along the way, and you have to get out of it. It's like a golfer getting into a sand trap. If you don't figure a way out, you can't play the game. But remember, God is always there. Your mind can be trusted. Think, and you will come up with the answer. Try to create excuses, and you're only delaying the inevitable.
Beautiful, Dennis. Now, let's now take a little bit of a dive into the realm of cognitive meditation, blessed souls, and in contrast to, again, the type of quieting positive effect that the mindfulness form of meditation, let's say you're focusing on the air that you breathe, or you can put your hand on your heart and feel the pulsating within your chest. You can put your hand on one hand on the veins that are protruding out of slightly from your right or left hand, right you know, right around the wrist area, or the vein by, or the vein that's, you know, you sometimes get an injection at the on the opposite side of your elbow, and that is good because we have an emotional realm within our brain. We have a rational level in our brain. I think the rational level, according to science, is the right brain thinking, the left brain thinking. And that's all according to the Torah, from the inner dimension of Torah. And the emotional, which is in the lower range, I believe, within the human mind. And if we sense some sort of anger towards someone we love, or we feel fright towards someone who we depend upon, or someone who is really off limits to us, who could pose a danger to us, a tug of war ensues. So what does a person do after they've, so to speak, gone through these conflicting emotions by engaging in mindfulness meditation, which is extremely healthy? I find the time myself, it helps me get to sleep at night when I've had a very stressful day and I haven't done enough exercising and riding my bike back from, say, like Flatbush to my humble abode in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York. There comes a point where, again, when we realize we as human beings have this unique brain chemistry on the right side of our brain, on the left side of our brain, and there's even a more elevated form of brain chemistry when we're going between the process of perceiving something which is very, very profound. Like, say, we look into the sky and then we see the stars, or by day we see the sun, or by the night we can see the moon when the moon appears to us at night. And we can ask ourselves, if we have quieted ourselves down or we're still struggling, we're sort of like on the tightrope of ambivalence, which can in fact be borne out from the meditative process, that if we sense the beauty of something very profound, that's basically a right brain sensation or experience, that's okay if we can't explain it in an elucidated fashion. If we wish to look at it from the left brain perspective, codify that which we perceive is extremely profound, that again also will take an effort, because a moment ago we couldn't describe why something, I still, to this day, can remember the wonder of standing at the bottom in an area where I can get a good view of Niagara Falls, the noise, the spray hitting my face from the waters crashing down, and actually it's a certain type of vibration one can sense from the power of the water crashing. I forgot the height of the Niagara Falls. I don't know, it's a 500 feet, 1,000 feet, whatever it may be. And I can now codify it, because how much water is constantly flowing? How much water is crashing down upon the rocks below? Are there creatures that have been swept, you know? And in fact, they have found, I think I heard a story recently that the Native American peoples used to wait at the bottom of the Niagara Falls because there were animals that got swept into the current haplessly by mistake, or say like fish that came, and they came crashing down, and those native peoples had nourishment. Now, I don't wish it upon the animals, but the fact that the Creator has allowed that there's such a thing as the Niagara Falls to happen, that created nourishment for human beings. So on one level, just to look at Niagara Falls is an extremely profound experience, at least in my humble opinion, and then to realize there's all sorts of things. And then as I grow a little older, and to this day, if people are not aware of it, that the hydroelectric power that is being generated from the power of the falls is giving energy to, I think, 4 or 5 states in the eastern seaboard, maybe going a little bit out to Ohio, certain to various municipalities and whatever they're called in Canada, on the Canadian side. So we see that one act, one little space, although it's pretty large when you stand there as a teeny tiny human being before the Niagara Falls, is to realize there's a profundity and there's a level we can codify, realize, and this is just one teeny tiny sector of the earth, which the first Chabad Rebbe, Reb Shneur Zalman Liadi, has designated that the earth is a mustard seed in relation to the whole creation. So look at this activity on the mustard seed of within the creation. Dennis, your take on these matters, on how a person can...
Well, that
in a
reminds
general,
me of the word redemption. For the part of the human who thinks that they misinterpreted something or they didn't get the correct idea, or they committed some type of a sin, or they weren't following a mitzvah. In other words, they let themselves go for a moment, and they were distracted, and that, for that distraction, they feel like they're not complete. And they don't know how to reverse the process of how you can say, I'm standing here at a waterfalls, and the most important thing is not the water. What is the purpose of the waterfalls? Why is it there? Who put it there? Can I enjoy it? Can I understand it? If I can't, then we don't want to go through any false thinking. So retribution is when we commit something or we think we've done something wrong. How can we regain our original thoughts so we can feel better as a person? The way to do that is to follow a path that will undo what you did. And an example of that is, suppose you accidentally, in your anger, curse out somebody who you really love. Mm-hmm. You cannot just use the word sorry and you can wipe the blackboard clean because you used an eraser word like sorry. No, you must practice the word to get back to where you were so that the people who heard you use a word in anger will realize you're not going to do it again. You must find retribution so that you can change and regain where you were. You can regain anytime you want if you put the effort in. That effort, or the effect, as you said, there's an effect or affect, but if they don't see that you're working to change something and change the affectation or the affectation, then nobody's going to believe your words that come out of your mouth. You must do it by deeds, thought, and we can see somebody who has an intent to do good things. It's there. You can follow the path, but you must have the resolve, and you must be brave enough to admit that you can adjust for any imperfection you have.
Beautiful, Dennis. I'd like to go further. Now, say a person can codify that sense of profundity, and they can bring it down to their blessed human experience of speech. And I say it's a blessed human experience because I do have experienced blessed souls working with nonverbal, autistic human beings. And I can just tell you that not only are they prevented from expressing their cognitive awareness, so we have to use other means of understanding them, by whether it be sign language, or those who are able to read can indicate on these boards that are created either now on the computer screen or just like cutout boards like you could use for chess or something, and they can identify emotions because they're cognitively aware enough. And people should know that within the spectrum of autism, that doesn't consign a person to being developmentally disabled from the perspective of their IQ. In fact, they can be just as intelligent, if not more intelligent than us. Yet, so when a person is able to experience the blessed thought process, as we've talked before, if a person is able to experience the blessed process of the perception of the profundity of whatever has come upon the microscope or the scanner of their mind, and then they can clearly elucidate it through their faculty of speech, we're saying that they're bringing that idea into the physical world. Now, of course, the idea in our brain, because our brain and our rest of our bodies and the rest of our being is in this physical world, but the fact that it's coming out in a form of speech will now make it privy to something else. It's going to be the wisdom and understanding as it is evoking some sort of emotional extension. Meaning, if we just keep things in the realm of hypothetical reasoning, without putting it to the litmus test of practical application, we are truly cheating ourselves and, in fact, others when we're trying to engage in some sort of potent, empowering conversation. If we can't come out with a practical outcome of some, let's use the street, a highfalutin idea. And therefore, we want to stress, when you're able to perceive the profundity of something, and then the letters of thought, the blessed human experience of thinking, allows you to now bring it down to your speech, that a person, unless, you know, when people are generally depressed, They're going through a depersonalization, and sometimes it's even hard for them to speak. Or when they speak, it's in very monotone manner. But I think anyone who's listening to Dennis and I, and I'm listening to Dennis, and I think Dennis is listening to I, we hear there's not only just an intellect, our teeny-tiny intellects reverberating out into the creation, but also there's a lot of emotion. There's a love and a fear and a concern and a sense of beauty of this conversation. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, we're always trying to do better, but you don't have to verbalize it. Sometimes you can make a face. Sometimes you can wave a hand. Sometimes you can have body movement. But we got to see that there's an effort that you're trying to do better. How we recognize that effort is something that human to humans can recognize. It may not be speech. It could be speech. But you can see through the other person's motions, how their body is angled, how they're addressing different things, that they're changing or they're trying to do better. In other words, can we see an effort that will really make a difference? And it's not just words. There's different people that have different disabilities. But that doesn't mean they can't get an idea or a concept across to other humans. They do it in many different ways. Sometimes a little smile at the right time can tell a lot more than giving a speech about how sorry you are. But if you look them in the eye as opposed to looking someplace else, are you really interested in your problems and their problems? Who knows? But humans have a feeling for this. We are sentient beings, and we have to feel it because we don't do strictly by the words, strictly by a smile, strictly by a wave of a hand. We got to understand that your mind and your body is paying attention.
Thank you, Dennis. And I just want to mention that when, as the technology developed, that certain autistic human beings, have been able to communicate to a computer because they're cognitively aware enough, the awareness that they have is mind-boggling. Again, it can be more than the average person. It can be more than the more than average human intellect, because they. Lubavitcher Rebbe was once asked about an idea of an autistic individual, and he said, they have a unique connection to Creator. Our problem is that we don't know how to communicate to them, with them, or they, you know, we could, it wasn't, he really wasn't putting the onus of responsibility on the person who is experiencing autism, but rather upon us to try to understand where they're coming from. Totally, you know, overturning the idea that it's their problem. No, it's our problem when we're confronted with the fact that we are limited in our intellect. We are limited in our emotional capacity. We are limited with our patience. And that's where the problems ensue, as opposed to developing a more nurturing society for individuals who need more time for us to better understand them. Not that they need more time. Of course, they need more time to work in the type of therapies that will allow them to become more conversant with us, whatever form they may be. But I think it's a very important point, Dennis, to share that when we see someone struggling, that there are different types of produce that come into the creation. There's wheat, which takes about 7 weeks or up to 52 days to develop. There are two types of fruits, which take a season to develop. And then we have the proverbial fig tree, which takes 70 years to develop it at the proper level in order to produce those luscious fruits that we call figs. Go figure. But the point is, do we have the patience, Dennis, with each individual? And the Rebbe encouraged, we should never give up on helping another person develop, because by the way, and I'm just adding this parenthetically, that's connected to our own development as fully actualized human beings. Your take on these matters.
Well, we have seen many studies where people who have deficiencies in some way, shape, or form have other abilities that are more advanced than the normal people. That is, because they had to overcome these disabilities, they had to figure out a harder way to do simpler things. Meanwhile, the people who don't have the disabilities never had to develop any of this because they're doing the simple things and doing quite well with them. So, don't underestimate the power of other people. We are all granted a mind. Some work in different ways than others. But we are all limited to what we can do with our minds if we try. But if you don't try, who knows how good you could have been?
Beautiful, Dennis. Now we're talking about a level of our cognitive awareness relating to cognitive meditation, where we can observe two different individuals who are actually very bright human beings, and their IQs are the same, so to speak. And one is able to connect to a concept and comprehend that which he or she has gained some sort of profundity in, whether it be just from the right brain processing, the wonder of the matter, or to elucidate what the wonder is all about. And they can actually spend an hour or more on this idea that they is coming to their mind's eye, the scanner of their mind, the microscope of their mind. But the second person can get it equally as well on a, you know, on intellectual level, but is not interested in trying to stay connected with the idea, although he understands it very well. Meaning, the second person struggles to contract their thought process to invest their time, which is very precious, of course, to tarry with the idea that he understands, but because they don't take the time to tarry in continuing to immerse them on it, kind of like review it, or I guess you could say create a mantra for that intellectual understanding, which is basically just reviewing it over and over and over again. And in our, you know, voluntary and sometimes it's involuntary system of most of the time it's involuntary, but we can make it a voluntary process. Well, the idea of respiration, we can be mindful of our breath, so we just keep on breathing, thank God, and we are breathing. But this individual who is willing to commit his or her mind to review something over and over again, we shouldn't be surprised if they're feeling a nourishment in the review process. And that's where a person starts to get the confidence of a certain type of knowledge, which is reflective of activating all the potentialities of their back brain processing. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, it's all a question of analytical ability. Some people can see something, see through it, and get to the essence. Other people have to do a lot of research, reading, just to get past the normal level of things, and they never get to an advanced level. Why? We don't know. People develop different analytical abilities. But there's one level of human sensibility that's involved here, and that is satisfaction. Does a person who have advanced abilities get more satisfaction than somebody who doesn't? Or is there something else that's involved? We don't know, because we don't know what actually goes on in a lot of people's minds. We can give them tests and tests and tests, but that would only give us an idea of what they're doing with their brains, so to speak. But what are they really thinking is the question that you're asking about. And that is, yes, there is satisfaction by repetition, but there's also satisfaction for knowing something. But there's the people who can really analyze things, jump onto other things once they realize that they've sort of conquered it. They know it backwards, forwards, up and down, sideways, and everything. Do they now go on to something else? It's like someone who has an acumen for numbers. They can read them backwards, forwards, upside down, any way you want. Will they jump onto something else called letters, or will they stick in numbers? Or will they say, I'm so good at numbers, I don't need anything else? This is the reason why we're imperfect, is because we don't know what is the perfect scenery we should be following. But we do follow things that we are good at. We should stay away from those things that we're not too good at.
Yeah, I'm thinking, Dennis, about in terms of words. I think Einstein was once quoted saying that, you know, what was the key to success in his career as a physicist? And he said, I think in symbols. But I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, aren't letters symbols? Aren't pictures symbols? Everything symbolizes something. So, But the third Chabad Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, talked about this idea when a person has something called a tirachush, meaning the power, the talent for pictorializing some sort of idea and making it very tangible through that pictorialization process, they are very most likely to get closer to Creator in a process of what we call in English repentance, or in Hebrew tshuva, to return. So Dennis, for your last comment for today, this idea of teaching individuals, whether you think in letters or you think in pictures or you think in symbols, you've got to be mindful of what you're thinking about.
You must be mindful of what you're thinking about because it must lead somewhere. There are no real dead ends in your mind. You will always pick something else to either get an interest or nibble at or scratch. But what way is your mind pointed? Are you analyzing? Are you trying to understand everything or just some things? You must gain control of your mind to where you're comfortable and you can get satisfaction. But the whole idea is applying your analytical abilities to the problems in front of you. If you can't recognize simple problems, then your analytics may not help at all. So we have to question, constantly question ourselves as to whether or not we are going about it in the right way. And to do that, there's nothing better than asking for divine help. It works, but only if you make an effort.
Thank you, Dennis. And I'd just like to announce to everyone that Dennis will be leaving, I think, within the next couple of weeks and going down to south of the border in South America. So, Dennis, I'd like to give you a homework assignment that whether you want to take notes or just take the notes within your blessed mind, to describe to us something which is perhaps not so regularly seen in, say, the concrete jungle of New York City or for any city that may be on the face of the earth. So we can conjure up a mindful picture for relaxation purposes and for cognitive purposes. So I hope you'll accept that homework assignment, sir.
Done.
Okay. With that being said, bless those, we've concluded today what I think has been a potent and eye-opening and mind-opening and hopefully heart-opening dialogue. This has been Meditation, Part 2. And I'd like to end off with a song by a young man who is surging to the awareness of more and more Jewish individuals, Jewish people, men and women, and also for the Bnei Noach, the children of Noah. His name is Nissan Black. He started as a rap artist in the earlier part of his life in Seattle, Washington, and ran with a pretty difficult crew, and then decided he'd like to reorient himself to becoming an observant Jew. So here's a song called Adored, which if you see the video, he starts by singing on the shores of the Dead Sea, but you don't get the sense of death when you're by the Dead Sea, blessed souls. You get the sense of God's judgment and also the Creator's mercies. And I think that this is something that Nissan Black is penetrating and exuding out into the creation with this song called Adored. And I hope I'll have it on the proper setting audio-wise, that it won't be too distorted. So I just want to wish everyone a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and may we all proceed in the way of Ahava Chad, one love, Gor Lachad, one destiny, Kulanu for all of us, Badarchinom Darki Shalom. This is Nissan Black, Adored, and I think with this song, he really scored. Take care, everyone.
Amen. I'll be your dog.
better than some up of the world. The vision much better, but then I fought levels and levels below it. Don't know where I'm going, don't know where I'm holding. I say I gave up, but I know I didn't. It's just my frustration, I'm only human. I act like I know what I'm really doing. As long as it's you that I'm really choosing. I will never give up, no, I wanna do it your way. You're the king of the world, only wanna do what you say. I know that.
Gladly, that's my reaction.
I just want you to know that I will.